Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 490 of the Professional Book Nerds podcast presented by Overdrive. This is Adam. No Jill today, but I do have two friends that I'm going to mention in just a brief moment. So last week on Thursday, a week from today, if you're listening, a week ago today, if you listen to this when it came out, I had two authors of comics that came on. We had Cami Garcia and Maggie Stiefvater on at the same time, which was super fun. We're going to keep the comics thing going because if you are an Overdrive partner, like a librarian or a school librarian who gets purchasing, Overdrive has a big old comic sale that we're really excited about. But if you're a reader and you don't have the ability to purchase comics at your library, that's okay too, because we're just going to talk about a bunch of books that we're really excited about. So first off, the people that are joining me today are Maria and Kristen. Ladies, hello. How you guys doing?
Hi. I can't believe you guys are almost at episode 500.
Yeah, I know.
That's crazy.
Two a week for almost 5 years, I think, or something.
Wow, man. Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah. At first, when we first started, we're like, should we do this every other week? Should we do it once a week? And I was the one who was like, what if we do it twice a week? And like, one was always an author. And then we're like, remember how we also have our real jobs to do. So,
yeah.
But now we're like committed, we're like pot committed, and there's nothing we can do. We just kind of have to plug along. So I should probably talk, Jill and I should probably talk about if we want to do like a fun 500th thing. I don't know what we're going to do yet.
Oh, that'd be fun. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to have something fun for 500.
I have so many, like one of the fun things about doing a podcast this long is like now I have other podcast friends and one of them has like their full year planned out by like May. And they're like, so how do you, like, what's your content calendar look like? I was like, Jill and I Slack each other on like Tuesday and say, what do you want to talk about for Thursday? Yeah. So yeah, as always, if everyone listening, anything that we talk about today, I'll put in the show notes so you can go in there and grab links and see all the books. You don't have to furiously write them down. And then if you want to get a hold of us, you can go to professionalbooknerds.com. That's where all 490 of our episodes can be found. Or you can tweet us at ProBookNerds. It's also what we are on Instagram. And you can email us at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com. That's all the housekeeping. Take a quick break to talk about today's sponsor. So just a little background story for you guys from me. Before I started working at Overdrive for the past decade, I sold life insurance as part of a family company, and it's something that is near and dear to my heart. And it's very, very important that everybody have life insurance, but it's something that not a lot of people understand. And not only can they struggle to comprehend exactly how important life insurance is, but they may not realize the facts about what can affect how much life insurance you can have and, you know, what it means for you as an individual. So this particular message is for the females that are listening to the podcast. So ladies, listen up. Not only do men have more life insurance than women, they have twice as much coverage. Jenny Life wants to shrink that gap. And it doesn't matter if you're a working mom, a single mom, expecting mom, single, or if your kids are your four-legged fur babies, you still need life insurance and you need Jenny Life. Jenny Life makes it fast and easy for women to know their families will be taken care of with life insurance that's uniquely built for your needs. Did you know that before Jenny Life, if a pregnant woman wanted life insurance, she'd have to use her pregnancy weight, and that means higher rates? Or did you know that at one point in the United States, it was illegal for women to have their own life insurance policy? This is stuff that's really, really important, and that you need to take advantage of this incredible opportunity that Jenny Life provides you because of the essential aspects of life insurance. So with Jenny Life, you can get your life insurance policy without blood work or unnecessary red tape, and you can do it all online from your own home. They ask 5 simple questions, curate plans from dozens of A-rated insurance carriers, and give you a personalized, budget-friendly life insurance quote in seconds. For example, a healthy 32-year-old woman can get $500,000 in coverage for about $1 a day without ever stopping into a doctor's office. Something that I always used to tell people when I was selling life insurance is it can be hard to think about the fact that you want to take care of people after you're gone because you're not going to be here and it's not a tangible thing you can hold. But think of it this way. If you can afford to buy yourself a cup of coffee from a fancy coffee shop once a week, you can afford life insurance and a way to set up your family for years to come in case something were to ever happen for yourself. Life insurance is something that every woman should have in place because every family deserves a secure financial future. So take a few minutes to get your Jenny Life policy right now. Visit jennylife.com/PBN to get a free quote today. That's jennylife.com/PBN for your life insurance quote today. jennylife.com/PBN. I'm going to let you two kind of go back and forth and just talk about comics that you have read or are excited to read. Which one of you two would like to start?
I'm going to go ahead and ask Maria, what is your comic reading style? What do you tend to read? Just so we can kind of set the baseline here.
Oh, that's like, I'm so glad you asked that because when I was like thinking of what titles I wanted to talk about today, I was like, wow, okay. I have like two very, very different styles that I like to read. So I like to read nonfiction graphic novels, that are just very narrative nonfiction based. The art can be very minimal or very detailed. Doesn't matter. I started doing that with Guy Delisle's travel logs, like Pyongyang and Jerusalem and stuff. And now I just think it's an awesome way to read nonfiction. So, you know, lately I've been like, I read My Friend Dahmer. I'm going to read Derf's new one, but we can talk about that more later as well. But then I also really love the very high style, like fantasy, like very art-based types of things. So it's like two very different styles, but that's pretty much what I read. Most of what I read is adult and not teen or kids. So how about you?
I tend towards a lot of graphic memoirs. One of my favorite authors of all time, and especially in comics, is Lucy Nicely. And she writes more graphic memoir style. The one most people know her for is Relish, which is a memoir about growing up with her parents who are big foodies. And so she was in the kitchen a lot and just like the importance of food in her life. I love her illustration style. It is very like comic-y. I don't know how to describe illustration styles, so this could be awful.
I mean, I think I know what you mean because I'm nodding over here, but I've seen the cover.
Yeah, which it's very adore. Know, kind of rounded form and yes. Like very line heavy. I don't know. Anyway. But right now I have been, I need to reread something new, which is her memoir about getting married. And it was just delightful as well. She also has a memoir about having a kid. And she does a really great job of like letting you into her life and letting you know about, you know, exactly what she was feeling and thinking and what was happening to her. I feel like sometimes the problem with memoirs is you're not let in enough, like there's still that door that's shut, and she just does a great job of explaining everything that's going on with her and the situation, and she's funny and delightful and I love her. And then on top of that, I think I really like fantasy graphic novels, and a lot of like middle grade graphic novels.
Because have we talked about Rat Queens?
Yes.
Oh my God. I was just gonna say I'm behind on it. I think I'm on volume 6 or 7, which I just rechecked out to myself because this like inspired me to start Rat Queens again. And I just remember that was one of the first things we probably connected with on a comics level. Is I was like, does anyone else read this? When I was going to try and start it, and you were like, I think you'd like it.
Yeah.
And you're right. So there you go. That's the benefit of having librarians as your colleagues in all things. Really great.
And I will say, before we get into you guys' actual picks, for anyone who is on Twitter, which is most of the world, and especially in book Twitter, which I imagine is most of our listeners, S.E. Hinton, who wrote The Outsiders, had just a really trash take recently. Somebody asked her if they would ever consider making a graphic novel of The Outsiders, which is one of the first books I ever read, and I remember really sticking with me. And her response was something like, The Outsiders is one of the first, you can probably tell by the tone of my voice, this is a bad take and I'm going to dunk on it. She said something like, The Outsiders is one of the first books that anybody learns to read and realizes that they can read themselves. So no, I'm not going to create a graphic novel so you can just look at pictures as opposed to learning how to write the words. And that is a shitty take, because graphic novels are incredible ways to experience stories, not only differently than you might, like Jason Reynolds' Long Way Down is becoming a graphic novel. That's an incredible book. And I'm also excited to read the graphic novel because I know I will experience it a different way. But like the images that you see, if you are a young, like developing reader, it lets you experience the words and like understand and provide context and all these different reasons. But also just like the art is equally as impressive, if not more so, than the words of a story. And graphic novels, like almost all the time, like any author that I've talked to talking about graphic novels has explained like, oh yeah, the illustrators are doing all the heavy lifting in this story. I wrote like 400 words and they literally did like pages upon pages of full, like, you know, imagery that's beautiful. So I don't know why people need to like feel the need to do this all the time when they're like, oh, audiobooks aren't reading, ebooks aren't reading, graphic novels aren't reading. Like, who's tracking this and what are you tracking it for?
Yeah, like, and also, like, it just sounds like maybe they've never read a comic. Like, it sounds like they've never actually opened a comic. Like, they're literally thinking about, like, the comics they see in the newspaper, which are also fine, but, like, that's, you know, those still have words. Those still tell a story in three frames. So,
and even if there aren't words, like you open a book and regardless of if it's a graphic novel, a picture book, a children's book, or friggin', you know, something like War and Peace that has 60 million words, whatever it is, regardless of how you experience a story, you're going into a new world or you're learning something new. And so however, this is just like my little like soapboxy, like however you like to read, that's awesome, whatever you're doing. So
I think comics, graphic novels provide a different form of literacy in the form of those illustrations, because you have to be able to look at them to read the situation, and then you add in the context of the words to that. So it's just that next level of being able to read. And we've done a lot of webinars for reluctant readers and just readers who are, you know, having trouble reading. Graphic novels and comics are excellent for that. There has been a big trend recently of turning novels and nonfiction books into comics and graphic novels. And I think it's excellent, because if you have kids who can't get through a book like Long Way Down, but then they see that the graphic novel is there, they're able to pick that up. And if it's something that all of their friends have been reading, now they can actually have that conversation with their friends. They may have read it in a different format, but it doesn't matter. They're still able to process the story and what happened. So I am all for any way that people can be reading. Like, don't hate on reading in any format.
So that was this was our PSA. Imagine the like stars shooting across the screen saying the more you know. I just saw that S.E. Hinton thing. And
I'm going to continue on this train.
Oh, please.
All I'm thinking of right now is David Wiesner. He is an amazing illustrator. He does children's books. He has one called Tuesday and Floatsome, and they are completely there's no words in them. It's all illustration, and they are excellent for children because the kid is able to tell the story. So if you read them with a kid, you say, what's happening on this page? What do you think is going on? And you let them make the story up as they go. So yeah, I'm all about comics. I'm all about illustration. Bring it on.
I'm going to piggyback off of that, because one of my picks was a wordless comic book or graphic novel, whatever. They came out like a few weeks ago, The Wanderer by Peter Vandenende from Chronicle. And it's like about a like paper boat that goes on all these adventures. And the illustrations are, oh my God, they're so gorgeous. They're so gorgeous. It's like one of those like an adult could easily just like enjoy by themselves, but also it's something that you could enjoy with a kid as well. Like, I don't have a kid. I will enjoy it just as thoroughly. Yeah, but anyway, the illustrations are phenomenal.
Listen, we had, it's not only graphic novels, like children's books. There's Raj Halder is coming on the podcast in a couple of weeks, and he did P.S. for Pterodactyl. And also he has another one coming out about homonyms that we talk about, homophones. And like, same thing. I don't have children. And I remember when P.S. for Pterodactyl came out, we were all in the office still. And I remember like groups of us like standing around being like, listen to this children's book. This is delightful. So
yeah, definitely read that. Like as a sample.
Okay. All right. Let's get into you guys' picks, even though we've kind of been talking about a few now. Kristen, I'll let you talk only because when I looked up, Maria was taking a sip of
Okay, so I'm going to talk about a series that I have read recently that I really love that is perfect for this time of year, Harrow County by Colin Bunn. It is a bit older, but it is so, so good. It has a very creepy, the first volume or issue has a really creepy front cover of like, it's this like hand that's basically just skin, like coming out of a drawer. It's so creepy. And it is the story of a girl who lives in Harrow County, and she finds out that she's a bit different from everyone else. She has some sort of powers, and it makes a lot of the townspeople afraid of her. And also there are a lot of, as they say in this, it's, I'm going to say haunts, but it's H-A-I-N-T-S. So I think that's like a Southern kind of thing. I'm not sure.
Huh. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And so there are all these like creepy creatures living in the forest around her. And so she's trying to figure out where she came from. And supposedly there was a witch who lived in Harrow County, and they ended up like burning her kind of a thing. And so she thinks that maybe she is like part of the witch, or, you know, a reincarnation of that witch. It's really good. I really enjoy a lot of the characters in it, and it just kind of continues building the story throughout the series. So I would highly suggest that one, especially for this time of year. I also, again, another one for this time of year, I figure like I talked about this the last time I was on the podcast, but The Lola Woods by Carmen Maria Machado. This one came out very recently, and it's part of the Hill House Comics, which is part of DC. And Joe Hill has put this imprint out. So Joe Hill is a horror writer. And so he is starting this line where a bunch of different writers are making horror comics. Mm-hmm. And The Lola Woods was good. I enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy it as much as I thought I would. But it was interesting story about a town called Shudder to Think, and in Pennsylvania. And it's a coal town, and all the people there, you know, there's been some sickness going around, and the women in the town have this weird thing that happens where they'll just like black out, where it'll be a couple of hours that they're missing. They have no idea what happens, and they just never get those memories back. So it's the story of two girls who wake up in the theater after a couple of hours, having no idea what happened to them. And so one of them really wants to figure out what happened. The other one kind of just wants to move on. And there are like weird creatures coming up from the mines in this town. So, and weird creatures that live in the woods. So another really good October pick. Maria, I will let you talk about some of your favorites.
Well, no, I actually, when you described the cover of, what was the first one?
Harrow County.
I was like, wait, I've seen that cover. I think my husband, I think, started that last year. I was like, this cover is like very familiar to me. So I believe he read that and enjoyed it as well.
Yeah. I was also laughing because I'll let you go in one sec. I was laughing because when I'm joined by our coworkers like you guys, I'm a really bad host because I just sit there and I listen to all the things that everyone's talking about. And I'm like, oh, right, I'm supposed to keep this moving. So I was just like sitting here quietly, like, tell me more. So I'm right now, I will shut up. Go ahead.
No, it's all good. So I just finished one last night called Eat and Love Yourself by Sweeney Boo. And it's a, I think it's a standalone, at least it read like a standalone. And I don't see like another issue or anything, but it's about Mindy, who's like in her late 20s and she is struggling with body dysmorphia and bulimia and just like a lot of negative self-talk. And it kind of goes throughout her life. And then there's like a little fantastical element that comes in. She buys this candy bar that is magic. And it's called Eat and Love Yourself. And like, she takes a bite and she gets transported back in time. And she can like see herself dealing with these formative times in her life that kind of like had her in this negative spiral where she's still dealing with this depression and body dysmorphia in her late 20s. And it kind of is like her journey through like looking at these times in her life and figuring out how to move forward and like, you know, get out of it and help herself in the present. It's really cool. It's very realistic as far as like, I think the illustrations and the colors that they use go along really well with like how she's feeling. So like all the colors are like pretty muted and you're just like, oh my gosh, this is just like, you feel so down for her. And if you've ever experienced, you know, negative self-talk in any way, it's like, it's very realistic. And I really enjoyed it. I had never really read anything quite like it. So it came out recently, I want to say, published by Inscribe Digital, but it was really good. I enjoyed it a lot. And then, okay, something that's less depressing. Taproot by Keezy Young. I think this originally was just a web comic, but like, oh, it's so wonderful. It's also just a standalone. It's about a ghost and someone who is alive, whose name is Hamal, and he can see the ghosts. And basically he's kind of a loner and he has like a few like ghost friends, and they're people who just died in the town at like, you know, whatever age, and they're here to haunt it. Well, Blue and Hamal have this close relationship, and Blue's realizing he's having a hard time moving on and not like haunting the real world because he's in love with Hamal. And they end up finding out that like Hamal is the reason he can see ghosts is causing like a rift kind of in between the ghost world and the real world. And basically Blue and Hamal have to kind of decide like, okay, are we going to, you know, make this relationship happen in some way, or like does Blue have to give him up to kind of like save this rift that's happening? Really heartfelt, really, really sweet. It's a quick read that will like tug at your heartstrings, and Blue is very witty and fun, and Hamal is very quiet and gentle. He's like a gardener. It's very sweet and I really like it. Oh.
I'm actually gonna join in. I have some too that I haven't talked about in a really long time, so like we have a bunch of new listeners from like over the past year, so they probably may not have heard of these. Have either of you guys read Thornhill by Pam Smy?
No.
Okay, so I thought of it because Kristen, you're talking about stuff that's good for right now, and I think this one's also really, really good. So it's a comic that's told in parallel stories that are set in different times. So there's one that is set in 1982, and it's this girl named Mary who is this orphan at this place called Thornhill Institute for Children. And it's shutting its doors down, so there's not too many girls left, and they're getting rehomed, but she's also facing this, she has this like really horrible bully that's there, and she is writing these journal entries about how she's plotting her revenge against her bully, and that goes back and forth with modern day, or the time was modern day, it was 2017. There's this girl Ella who moved in from a new town to this area where Thornhill was. And she sees Thornhill from her window, and she goes and investigates and like discovers these journal entries and like learns all about Mary's life and what she went through. But it's really cool because Mary's story is told exclusively through journal entries, and Ella's story is told exclusively through artwork. There's no words. So it's just like the art on the page, and Maria, you were talking about like striking colors. It's the same thing. Like it's entirely in like black and white and gray. It's like very monochromatic. I think it's called.
Yeah.
And it's really, it is. It's a really like, it's very haunting. It's a really good story for right now. If you are into the spooky kind of like ghostish stories, it reminded me of a book, Dead House by Dawn Kurtagich, which is not a graphic novel or a comic, but it's like kind of in that same line if you've heard us talk about that before. And then the other one, Check Please by Ngozi Okazu, which is not spooky. It is hilarious. No.
So good.
Yeah. Ngozi was on the podcast, I think like 2 years ago. So it's been a while since I talked about this, but okay. This all makes sense, I promise. So the main character's name is Eric Biddle, and he's a former junior figure skating champion, and he's also a vlogger, and he's also a baker, and he's super busy, and then he goes to college as a freshman, and the college doesn't have like a ice skating program, but they have a hockey team, which he joins and kind of becomes like one of their star players. And it's just this like really fun story. I thought it started out as a webcomic, like
Maria's, yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
It's just this, like really fun, like he does it almost like he's doing vlogs, is kind of how you like get the check-ins from him. And it's all about his experience of how he is adjusting to being on his team. And like, it's not really a spoiler at all to say that he is gay. Like he's very open about it, but like there's just this one little scene and like further down when like someone is asking like, what kind of girls are you into? And then like it cuts to him being in his room and he's like, boys. And it's like such like a sad, like he says, it's like so like adorable, but like sad. But he's just like this hockey team that you would expect to be like a big masculine, like group of rough and tumble guys. You're like super into when Biddy, as they call him, like makes pies for everybody. And like, it's just like it's a delightful group of like this cast of characters. And I don't know, it came out in, there's a couple of like they have volumes of, I think there's two or three volumes.
I think there's at least two. I've only read the first one so far, but I know there's at least two out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely just like a really feel good. Like I feel it's almost like a really good palate cleanser. If you read something like really, really heavy, which I can't, like every book I'm stumbling into is just like emotional, like it's destroying me. So like, it's a good, like, break point. So yeah, Check Please by Ngozi Okazu is just very delightful.
Nice. That's awesome. I'm glad you mentioned that one.
Yeah. All right, Krista, we can swing back to you.
I'm just like looking through my list of things that I've read or want to read. And I'm also noticing another trend. I really like webcomics and webcomics that are then turned into books. So some of my favorites, Kate Beaton, she does Hark a Vagrant, which is like a website, her website. And she writes historical like parody kind of comics. So some of my favorite are actually, she does these Nancy Drew ones where she'll take like the 1950s Nancy Drew cover and she'll make it into something really funny. Like in it, Nancy Drew is always kind of an idiot. And it's like, her friends are always like, Nancy, you need to stop. And it's like Nancy Drew and the ghost light or something.
Yeah.
And they are hysterical. She does have a book out. She actually has a couple. The one I'm thinking of is Step Aside Pops. And so it has this woman in like a full-on skirt and hat sitting on a bicycle. And it's just, she's hilarious. I absolutely love them. They're perfect for, again, you can just open it up and read like one of the strips and then kind of move on from there. Some of them are a little bit longer. Also, I love Sarah Anderson. She does Sarah's Scribbles and she has a couple of books. Her first one is Adulthood is a Myth. And her second one is Big Mushy Happy Lump. And they're another one where you can read it really quick and just pick it up and like read one page and move on. And they're just like funny little quips. Some of them it's about like her anxieties or just about like her cat and how happy her cat makes her. And so I love that.
Adulthood is a Myth is very fun. I read that as well. That's another like good palate cleanser one because it's like she deals with her anxiety, but it's in a funny way. And it's just like, you can read it in a day and
Yeah.
It's nice. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, no, you're totally fine. I'm happy to have some backup like, on that one.
Getting excited when I have like read the same things. I'm like, oh, we can talk about it.
Oh, my goodness. There is one. Sorry, I just thought of, I'm like, there's this one that, oh, okay, hold on. Before I go on another train of thought, let me finish that by saying As the Crow Flies by Melanie Gilman is a webcomic. It started off on the web, and I think she finished it in book format. And it is about a queer Black teenager who ends up going like into the woods with, I think it's with like a camp kind of a thing. And so they go hiking and camping out in the middle of nowhere. And it's about having to rely on other people and have other people help you in unfamiliar situations. It was really good. I really enjoyed, I like nature kind of stuff too. And that has a lot of drawings of, you know, mountains, trees, all of that stuff, along with this story of this girl having to feel like she's an outsider and then be reliant on other people in this group to help take care of her. And then the one I really want to talk about is Nimona by Noelle Stevenson. This is a few years older. We recently did a webinar where we were talking about some graphic novels, and I think I mentioned Nimona, and a bunch of people in the chat were like, Nimona is the best. And I was like, you are correct. Nimona is the best. So Nimona is a graphic novel about this girl who, she doesn't seem like she would be the, you know, superhero kind of type. And she's, it's a fantasy. So she can turn into all sorts of things. And she's hilarious. She ends up working with this guy who is supposed to be a villain, but is trying to change his ways. And I'm pretty sure it's been a while since I've read this. I think he's in love with the hero. And so it's kind of this battle between him and the hero when he's actually like in love with him. And it was, it starts off and it's really kind of silly. Nimona is such a fun character. And then it gets a little bit deeper as it goes along. And I just loved this. I flew through it. It is good for a young adult audience and an adult audience. So I would just suggest everyone read it.
Before we move on, I just need to tell you, in the book prior to this, you said the phrase into the woods. And just to let you know how my brain works, anytime I hear that phrase, if there is a then extended period of time where I am not talking, I am going through the prologue of Into the Woods in my brain. Just doing the whole thing. So,
I wish.
Exactly. Just, you should see my nectarines. Like the whole thing is just playing through my head. So I just had to share that. That was while you were talking, I was nodding and I was listening, but also in my mind, I was like, into the woods. And like just like doing the whole thing. Anyway.
Oh, so good. Yeah. So good. Nimona's on my list because so many people have been like, this was amazing. And I'm like, I know
if
I need
you
to
like
read
Rat
it.
Rat Queens, you're going to like this one. It's awesome. Not as like crass as Rat Queens.
I mean, I figured not.
Yeah. Since for young adults. Yeah.
Well, and Rat Queens is pretty crass. I mean, in like the best way, but is it okay if I go?
I didn't know
if you were done, Kristen. You were on a really good roll.
Doing words out, so it's your turn.
No, it's all good. I'm gonna talk about some nonfiction ones, so possibly less exciting, but very exciting, I think. So one that's coming out that I am really excited about, it comes out middle of November, is called Oak Flat: A Fight for Sacred Land in the American West by Lauren Redness. And this is like, if you liked Killers of the Flower Moon, which I listened to that on audiobook. Oh my God. It was so good. It was very riveting. And it's like the nice like combination of true crime and actual like history lesson about like the FBI coming up with that. This is another like sacred area for Native Americans that a copper reserve was discovered around that area. And so this is still an ongoing issue. Right now, between an Apache tribe and the government, basically. So there's like natural springs and old growth trees. And it's a contested site now because they want to get this copper. And it follows an Apache family and then also a family from Arizona who like is a descendant of a sheriff from the early days of Arizona statehood. So they both have like really profound connections to this mesa, and it's all really gorgeous colors, like very like lots of orange and red and kind of something that like desert kind of vibe from Arizona. And I'm very excited to read it. It looks very exciting. And also you'll learn something. So that's fun too. But yeah, I was like, ooh, this sounds like for fans of Killers of the Flower Moon, of which I am one. So, and then the other one I wanted to talk about was Kent State, Four Dead in Ohio, which is the new one by Durf Backdurf. And Durf is from the Akron, Cleveland area here. So that's also just really cool for us. But you may know him from My Friend Dahmer, which if you haven't read My Friend Dahmer, I highly recommend it. It's a very interesting take on going through the early life of someone who becomes a serial killer, because Durf went to high school with Jeffrey Dahmer. And so it's just his, he has very simple illustrations as well. It's all black and white for the most part. And it's just, you end up getting sucked into this story without a lot of pizzazz. And some reason he like still like sucks you in. It's very, it's fascinating. But his latest is about the National Guard shooting that happened on Kent State's campus in 1970. I think this is also just like kind of a timely, timely time. That's terrible, no, but
it's the 50th anniversary this year. We had I did an episode with it like back in May. But sorry, you can keep going. But yeah, it is very timely because it's this year was the 50th anniversary.
Yes. Very timely. And it's very, this one is packed with like a lot of history. And the people, I haven't read it yet, but the people I know who have read it are like, this is a lot denser than his other works, but it is like basically a required reading for learning about this time period and this event that took place in Kent, Ohio, you know? So highly recommend, love his illustrations. He's a great storyteller. So I'm excited for both of those. And sometimes it's hard, at least lately, it's been hard for me to get through nonfiction. I mostly read on audio or listen to it on audio, and I haven't been driving as many places. And I just tend to not listen at home as much. So it's been graphic novels that are narrative nonfiction have been really helping me to stick with my nonfiction for sure.
Yeah, I won't hark on it too much because people who listen know. So my parents are actually at Kent State when this happened. They were there. They were like on the campus. They, neither of them were at the rally specifically, but like they were outside. They know exactly where they were. And so if you go back and anyone listening, I interviewed Deborah Wiles, who wrote a book called Kent State, which is also like massively important and really, really accurate. So yeah, that's was very big into mine too. I have to actually have one. Did either of you, and I'm thinking specifically of Maria, just because you were just talking about nonfiction. Has either of you read The Best We Could Do by Ty Bwee?
No, but that is on my list as well.
Okay. This is a graphic novel that is 350 pages long. And Ty did the entire story because it's her story, but also all of the illustrations and like just like a like landmark work of just the the sheer accomplishment. I have to imagine illustrating a 340 page book that you also wrote has to be the equivalent of like a David Foster Wallace, like writing Infinite Jest. I just can't imagine. But it's, I'm talking about this in the past a little bit too, but it's a bit of an older book. So it talks about her experience of becoming a mother for the first time, and then her thinking back to her Vietnamese parents' struggles as immigrants coming over from Vietnam, and just like her understanding of why her family was kind of broken when she was growing up, and having newfound understandings of adjusting to being a mom for the first time, but also like feeling like a daughter and it's just like endless sacrifices her family made. And it's very heartbreaking, but it also provides a bunch of hope at the end. So it's definitely heavy, but it's like it's a family kind of journey from being an immigrant family to how they are now. And like the name of the book is The Best We Could Do. And that's exactly kind of like the point of the whole story. It's like, we did what we could with, as our family, with what we were provided. And then the other one that's also kind of heavy that I talked about a little bit a couple years ago, What the Night Sings by Vesper Stamper. Have you read that? Mm-mm. Okay. So it's a graphic novel about the Holocaust. So definitely not light, but what it does is it follows a young girl who survives a camp, who's like, if I think she's in Auschwitz, I don't remember specifically which camp Gerda is at, but she's in a concentration camp and she survives. And like, the story does start before she goes to the concentration camp, but it almost, I don't want to say it like breezes through the time when she's there, but the bulk, like the meat of the story is her after, like when she has left the concentration camp and when the war has ended, and her like adjusting to what life was like after, like understanding that her entire Jewish family was killed and she doesn't know how to move on from there. And it's a really interesting take on, you know, there's countless World War II stories in the world, but this is one of the few ones that I've seen where it's like a young girl who survived the Holocaust, but now is forced to like pick up the pieces. I think so many times when mm-hmm. we think about tragedy and we think about massive things that happen, we think about like the specific event, but then we turn our heads to something else and don't realize like what the repercussions were, what people have to go through.
Yeah. The aftermath of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so,
I
was just gonna say, that's basically what The Night Sings is all about, is like that aftermath. But yeah, no, what were you gonna say?
That sounds really interesting. I was just gonna say also, like, I was just talking to someone about this recently, is that like most of the Holocaust survivors now are just dying of old age. Mm-hmm. So there's so few left that I think stories like this are just so important.
Yeah. And so the artwork, it's almost like sepia toned, and then there's like little mm-hmm. splashes of like bright blue or things like when the main character is dreaming. Also along those same lines, speaking of like important stories about the Holocaust, Brad Meltzer, who's been on the show like a million times at this point, he does the Ordinary People Change the World series, and they just mm-hmm. had one that's I Am Anne Frank that just came out last week. And it is like the way that he and Chris Deliopoulos, who does the imagery on it, the way they do it is like heartbreaking and amazing. So if you have young kids that are, even if you don't, but you know, talking about Holocaust survivors that are just kind of dying of old age, like it's now up to people our age and, you know, younger to continue learning about these things. So mm-hmm. yeah, I Am Anne Frank is like all of those books are amazing, but that one is just like, it blew me away.
Yeah, I saw that just came out.
It's amazing.
I like those books. Yeah, I like those books. Yeah.
Did either of you read White Bird by R.J. Palacio? Palacio?
I think it's Palacio. I think you had it right. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. He wrote Wonder, and this is kind of an offshoot of that. Personally, I haven't read Wonder. I know I'm terrible. But I know one of the characters, like his grandmother survived the Holocaust. And so this is her story of basically like how she went into hiding and stayed alive throughout the war and ended up falling in love with one of the boys who kept her safe. It was really good. It was really moving. I thought it was an interesting story. And then also, have either of you read They Called Us Enemies or Enemy?
Oh, the one by, oh my gosh, why am I blanking right now?
Hold on.
Okay.
Sorry, what? George Takei.
Takei, yeah.
Yeah.
I have not.
That one was really good. That one is his, like, again, nonfiction about his time in, oh my goodness.
Internment camps.
Internment camps. And I feel like that's something like that is becoming, people are talking about more. Like I remember growing up and it never really being mentioned. It wasn't-
Barely learned about that.
Yeah, exactly. And so now, like, having this graphic memoir, which is about his family's time in the internment camps, it's amazing. I mean, and just, it's a beautiful story about his family trying to deal with being Americans and being sent to these camps where in the camp, young men who want to enlist, who want to join, and are told they can't because they're Japanese. And then, yeah, it's just kind of the everyday life, but also the, you know, how do you deal with this? What do you do when your country doesn't trust you? Right. So that was such a good memoir. I'd highly suggest that one as well. Does anyone have any other depressing memoirs?
Yeah, or... sorry, we really did, like,
I know, I was like, I have one more that I wrote down and it's not depressing, so I'm happy, you know, to what? Like,
let's do the shit. Yeah,
yeah,
let's,
okay, let's... yeah have either of you read Crowded?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so fun. It's like a near future kind of sci-fi comic. It has two volumes, I think, so far. I tried to like creep around everywhere and see if there's a third volume coming out, but not yet. And I'm very sad because I read them in like 2 seconds. They're so good. So basically, like, this near future world runs on like job shares and apps. That's how like everybody does everything, which is like very reasonable to think that, like, that could actually be the future. But there's a platform for legal assassination. And it's called Reaper. And this girl who seemingly just like is just trying to keep her life together, Charlie, she like wakes up one day and she has like the most expensive Reaper campaign. Like, people have like put $1 million towards getting her assassinated. And so she's like panics, and she basically hires someone on a different app that's called like Defend or whatever, who it's basically like a personal bodyguard, and she picks the person who has the lowest rating. I think it's because she just can't afford anything else, but I can't really remember. And her name's Vita. And then these two go on this like crazy adventure. Charlie is making it very difficult to defend, and Vita is just like really not having it. She's like an introvert, and she's just like trying to be left alone as much as possible. And, there's a lot of like forced proximity sort of things that happen, but it's really good. I'm really excited to see where it keeps going, but it's funny, but also has some like very, I guess I would say, concerning elements about like just people in society in general, and how, you know, a lot of times the worst is brought out, you know, depending on what situation they're in. But yeah, the artwork is also great. It's very colorful. It's the type of artwork I enjoy a lot. And that's by Christopher Sabella, Rose Stein, and Ted Brandt from Image Comics. It's real fun.
So much fun.
Yeah.
I love, because the main character, the girl who has the hit on her, like throughout it, you both want to like slap her and hug her. And then the person trying to protect her, like, she's kind of a mystery. So I remember reading it and just being like, what is her story?
Yes. And I think I feel like they're getting to it. But, and I want that story. Like, I will continue reading this comic until I find out more about her.
Do either of you two ever have books that you read or listen to, if they're audiobooks, that you're just like, I wish this was a graphic novel because of the imagery? So, like, I right now I'm listening to War Girls by Tochi Onibuchi, and like, it's a science fiction, and there's all these like mechs and all of this technology that all of the main characters have, that like they have bionic arms, or like there's little tiny like nanobots that they are involved with, and like all I can think of is like, my brain isn't as good as Tochi's because I can't fully form what that would look like. And then the other one, people who, if they haven't read it yet, they're about to, because Big Library Read is starting soon. Reverie by Big Library, or by Ryan LaSala, is like, it's just so wild and so fantastical that I'm like, I wish someone would draw this so that I can have like just like a little bit. Like I said, like with War Girls, like with Tochi's book, I'm about halfway through it, and it's like, I don't need like you don't need to like do the whole thing, but like just like one or two pictures from the beginning of the book so I can wrap my head around this crazy tech that he's invented. Like, is there any book that you ever thought like, man, I wish there was a graphic novel for that? Like, I don't know, The Outsiders by S.E. Hinton.
Yeah, actually, now that you're describing why you like want War Girls to have something, which I think I've mentioned this fantasy novel on the podcast before, but Gideon the Ninth, I would kill for more illustrations like the cover, because also like there's so much going on and there's people from all these other planets and the way she describes the worlds are awesome, but I would love a graphic novel of that. Yeah. For sure.
I have so one of my favorite children's book series is Fairyland by Catherine M. Valenti. And the first book in that is The Girl Who Circumnavigated Fairyland in a Ship of Her Own Making, which is a big old title. It is a pretentious children's like series, but I love it. And it's very much one of those, again, when you are creating a fantasy world, and especially one like this, where it's fairyland, where it's like, you know, you're going to have some like fun little creatures and things like that. Like, I want to see it. And I can just imagine that the graphic novels of this would be spectacular and beautiful. For some reason, while we're talking about like nonfiction graphic novels or whatever, I keep thinking of The Family Romanov, which it's a young adult nonfiction. It is it's such a good read. It was so much fun to read. I have to look up who wrote it.
Candace Fleming, I think. Yeah.
Romanov.
I think. She also did the that new Lindbergh one that came out, right? Yeah, yeah. Candace Fleming. Oh,
okay. So good. Thank you. It's the story of the last Tsar family and kind of what was going on in Russia during that period, along with what was going on with the family. So she does a really good job of showing you both sides of the picture and then bringing in Rasputin and what his whole deal is. So it was so good. Such a fun read, which sounds like a terrible thing to say when I'm like, Russian Revolution.
Yeah, yeah.
Family died, but it was really fun to read about. I think that one could make a really spectacular graphic novel.
I completely agree. I listened to that one on audiobook too, and I like sometimes forgot it was nonfiction.
Yes.
Like, whoa, wait, what? Like, I'm so into this. I do think that would be a really, really good graphic novel.
Yeah.
I want to make a whole list now for like overdrive.com. Like, books I wish were graphic novels. But there's this like, I have no, I don't put any context in it. People are like, I don't know what this means.
What? But they're not, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Did you guys have others that you wanted to talk about? I think we had a pretty good list here. And I also feel like when I have you two on, like we could talk for like 3 hours if we wanted to.
Yeah. I'm like, I have whole other swaths of things I could talk about as far as comics go. I'm not going to go into it. Cause again, this could be a very long podcast otherwise.
Yeah.
I'm just going, can I talk about one more?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Thank you. It's called The Daughters of Ys by M.T. Anderson. It's a Celtic legend. It's just one book. The illustrations are like the greatest thing I've ever witnessed, basically. And that's why I picked it up in the first place. But I don't even really want to say anything else about it other than it's the illustrations. There's a lot of illustrations without any text, and they are so crucial to understanding like the emotions behind the characters that I just recommend it to anyone who enjoys graphic novels.
I am now trying to find it on the app.
That's amazing.
It looks like you were going to say something.
Me?
No, Adam, it looks like Adam was like, after I said
the title. No, maybe I was just really excited because that sounds a lot like, there's a book called The Call by Peter O'Gean, who is an Irish I think it's Pedro Guin. Oh, I think I'm getting his last name wrong. Yeah, I know he listens to the podcast. I'm going to feel real bad. But no, his book is called The Call. And it's just like, it's like a brutal, like, it's like a Hunger Games in a magical school on like steroids. And everyone just gets super murdered. But there's no images in it. And I think that there, and there's like fairies and all sorts of stuff. Yeah, they get super murdered, Kristen. That's right. Not just murdered. Yeah, but okay. I think that was a whole bunch. We really did. It was like an emotional, like we got some highs, some lows.
I know.
I feel like I was looking at, this is only for people in our area of the country and the world. I was looking at our forecast here in Ohio over the next couple of days, and like fall in Ohio can be anywhere from like 40 degrees to 75,
yeah,
and sunny and wind and snow and rain and everything. And that's exactly what we have this week. So like, that's what our book recommendations were. It was all ran the whole gamut. So
I think I think so. And I have like, I wrote down like five now that I'm adding to my Goodreads immediately. So
yeah,
there you go.
That's the secret about this podcast, is it's, I just use it to meet authors that I want to meet, and then also all of us internally, we use it just to get ourselves book recommendations.
Yeah.
Well, Maria, Kristen, thank you both for joining me today.
Thanks.
Thank you. It was very fun.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Adam Sokol and Jill Grunewald, and presented by Overdrive. For more information, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Califato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.